Avoiding your unfinished home projects because you're not sure where to start? Thumbtack knows homes, so you don't have to. Don't know the difference between matte paint finish and satin? Or what that clunking sound from your dryer is? With Thumbtack, you don't have to be a home pro. You just have to hire one. You can hire top-rated pros, see price estimates, and read reviews, all on the app. Download today.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. What if comparing car insurance rates was as easy as putting on your favorite podcast? With Progressive, it is. Just visit the Progressive website to quote with all the coverages you want. You'll see Progressive's direct rate, then their tool will provide options from other companies so you can compare. All you need to do is choose the rate and coverage you like. Quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Comparison rates not available in all states or situations. Prices vary based on how you buy.
Looking for a job is lonely. Endless searching, phone calls that go nowhere, applications that vanish into thin air. What if you could link with dozens of local companies who are hiring right now with just one connection? That's Express Employment Professionals. Find us at expresspros.com. One connection, endless opportunities, and no fees ever for job seekers. Express Employment Professionals. ExpressPros.com.
We are back right here on the Pack-A-Day Radio Show, live from the 1250 AM and 105.7 FM, the Fan Studios, and powered by the Potawatomi Sportsbook. A reminder, Mason Crosby Show, coming up next. Mitch Nellis, Mason Crosby. I'm going to tease this one. They've got a really big guest coming up today. I'll talk to Mason and Mitch coming up at our little crosstalk segment on the end of today's show. I'll let them tell you who it is, but you're going to want to stick around. I don't get jealous very often. I would love to, at some point, be able to talk to the guest that they're talking to today, somebody that I have the utmost of respect for. So they'll tell you all about that coming up in just a bit. But right now, another guest that they're jealous of that they can't talk to today that I get to talk to is the one and only Matt Frey, like Pack-A-Day Podcast. You can find him on social media at Matt_Frey_Matthew. It is phenomenal to be chatting with you. How are you doing, my friend?
I'm good, Andy. It's good. Six days removed from the end of the draft, and I feel like my body's finally recovered after being out in the elements and walking around and standing. So it's been fun to dive in and take some rest to get into all these 8 picks.
I'm glad you are recovering. I am still spending way too many long nights going through all the film on all these draft picks and wrapping all the presents, which has been a ton of fun, but we're mere days away from me for finally maybe getting some rest, which I'm looking forward to. But Matt, I know you said you were out at the draft standing around. One of the things that I really wanted to do this week was have on a lot of different people that were out at the draft just to kind of gain that experience, because I think, again, it was such a unique thing. So maybe we can start out there. Just what was your experience being out at the NFL draft?
Yeah, I took it in all 3 days, which was more than I expected. But first day went down with my dad and my youngest brother. We actually biked down from our house, so that was pretty cool. Biking down there and getting as close as we can. I think a couple of people were envious of us. They said, like, hey, you guys figured this out. It's like, yeah, it's, you know, 2-3 miles, not too bad. Got down there, and I was, you know, expecting, you know, kind of the worst as far as weather goes. It wasn't looking too optimistic. But when getting down there and getting the elements, be able to move around, it was awesome. Tons of Packer fans, I would say like 80-90% of them. So cool to see them, but also mixed up with other teams. And getting down there and just, you know, navigating the crowd was fun, seeing everything down there. But then, you know, getting into the crowd, you know, massive amount of people there and getting ready for that Mark Murphy pick where he definitely, you know, amped it up like a WWE promo. That was pretty cool. I'll always remember that. Friday went down by myself. Again, battled the elements, raining, saw some other people through Pack-A-Day Podcast and other entities, stayed there down to the last pick. Met Roger Goodell. That was pretty cool. And then on Saturday, kind of did a family day. Went down there with me, my fiance, and our 2 twins, and just kind of walked around. It was beautiful out, very, very nice. And I think a lot of people did the same things. I saw as many strollers as I had probably the first 2 days there. So it was a great experience. I thought the Green Bay did phenomenal. It seems like even from the national side of things, people have, you know, commented how great it was, from pundits to people at the shows down there to people that weren't even at the draft but just hearing things. And very, very limited amount of arrests and ejections, Andy, which is also great on a 3-day event like this. We normally don't see those low numbers around the Packers event.
Yeah, listen, anytime you get 200,000 people together in a single space, there's usually going to be some sort of problem. Somebody gets too drunk. Somebody does something stupid. That's just a lot of people in the ratio of, something bound to happen at that point usually happens. And it really didn't. I was really, really impressed by that. The way that the crowd was. And I think it just kind of goes to speak to the draft in general is like, yeah, you might maybe not have a pick that you like or whatever, but the draft is literally the time on the NFL calendar where hope springs eternal for everyone. All 32 teams get to be involved. Everyone is happy. Everyone's excited about, that the next player that they take might be the one that changes their franchise in the right direction or can bring them Super Bowl success. So I think everyone's just a little bit happy and joyous around draft time. And it felt like that maybe carried over into the crowd in the draft where there's just good vibes and no issues, and that's exactly what I was hoping for, but you never quite know, and it seems like that's exactly what we got.
Exactly. And it was actually kind of fun, too, because, Bears fans were getting harassed a lot, and even on some of their picks, they're like, yeah, I'm not sure what we're doing. Everyone's very subjective about what was going on, which is pretty cool. Objective going into it. Not too, polarizing one way or another, getting harassed and taking that, on the chin, which I thought was pretty good from Minnesota fans, Lions fans, Cowboys fans, et cetera, which I enjoyed that there was some harassing going on across the board.
Yeah, I talked to Paul Farrington earlier this week, had him on, and he talked about as a Vikings fan how everyone, obviously some good-natured ribbing, but that everyone was so nice about everything. And again, it's just kind of classic Green Bay. Would not have expected anything different. Let's talk about some of these draft picks as we're being joined by Matt Fralick, Packaday Podcast. You can find him on social media at @Matt_Fray_. Let's start with the two wide receivers. Goody said in his press conference on day two that wasn't expecting to be up there talking about two wide receivers in the first three picks. So here we are. What do these two wide receivers mean for this current wide receiver room? And what do you feel like they can bring to the table?
Yeah, I honestly was hoping for a wide receiver in round one. It seemed eventually just the power of numbers is eventually going to have to change. I didn't expect Golden to fall. I also didn't expect Ibuka to go before Golden and nor Tim to the Bucs. I was expecting Ibuka to fall to us. But nonetheless, Matthew Golden comes in and ran the fastest 40 in the draft, which is great. But I definitely think his skill set is going to be pretty solid in this offense. He's not a 6'3", 6'4", 215 receiver like the Packers sometimes go after. He's a little bit a little bit smaller, maybe a bulked up version or an amped up version of Jaden Reed. But I think he instantly comes in this offense and at least can provide a spark, whether that's downfield, running the route tree, in short yardage plays. Hopefully he can block pretty well. I didn't really dive into it too much of his tape as far as the blocking realm, but clearly they're going to make him do that because that's a focal point for all of the Packers receivers to do that. Possibly on some special team stuff. We know Keyshawn Nixon has said, or at least tried to call a shot on what he doesn't want to do or does want to do now going forward in this team. They definitely struggled at times in the punt return game, as of recent. So maybe he'll contribute there. But I love the Matthew Golden pick. I didn't expect him to be there at 23. So love that they got him. And then, one of the more peculiar picks of the draft, it's third, in the third round, pick 87, getting a receiver there seemed, pretty rich, honestly, especially a guy like Savion Williams, which I know kind of was a popular, Packers Twitter pick or something along those lines over the last couple of weeks leading up to the draft. I didn't think he was a top 100 player. And then you look at kind of his skill set and you watch some of the tape, it's like, well, okay, this guy's entertaining. Like, he can move, he can run, he used to play quarterback at times in high school, but okay, I think Goody was trying to paint a little bit of a different picture of what he actually was. Goody was saying he could play on the outside, has some pretty sure hands. You look at the tape, not the surest of hands. It's one of the knocks on him is he has some drops. I don't know where he ends up being. Again, he will contribute on special teams, I would imagine, as well. Definitely a big body that can block, but the Savion pick was really strange. I think it's very obvious, but going out of day two and not having a single defensive player, let alone a corner, was pretty shocking to me. I think there was a little bit of run on corners right before that, if I do recall, which is disappointing. But I guess they added the receiver room, which I thought was important, but definitely didn't think they had to have two top 100 picks on that to do anything. And even that second receiver, I think he's a solid football player. I just don't know how great of a productive receiver he'll be in the league, which I think they kind of need at this point. They gotta they have good athletes in that room, but I don't know how great of the receiving core it is at this point, so that'll remain to be seen, but definitely a player to keep your eye on over the next couple months to see how he proceeds in this offense.
Yeah, really, really fun player, Savion Williams. Again, that fit is going to be interesting. You go back and you watch the 22 and 23 tape, and you see much more of what Goody's talking about, more pure outside wide receiver. In fact, the vast majority of his snaps came as outside wide receiver in his career. But in 2024, they basically just made him into that gadget player. And it was a lot more difficult to kind of get a gauge on what he'd be. So that, I think that's going to be interesting. But I think I wouldn't surprise me if they kind of started him more as that pure wide receiver and then kind of see where you can go from there. But yeah, that's the interesting one. And then, of course, on day three, after not taking any offense on day one or two of the draft, they come out right away. They take back-to-back-to-back-to-back defensive players. But I want to start off with that. The defensive lineman here, you get Baron Sorrell in round four, and then you get Colin Oliver in round five, and then you know you get Brinson a little bit later as a defensive tackle. What did you think about those picks along the defensive line and how they can maybe potentially help out this season?
I mean, the Baron Sorrell one was electric. Like, I'll probably, similar to the Golden pick, I'll always remember where I was with the Baron Sorrell pick. I'm walking down Lombardi heading east, and I can kind of see it up on the screen, and I hear a huge roar, and I check Twitter, and it's like Baron Sorrell's picked. I'm like, that's amazing. Obviously, everything after that, he was still in the green room, did the whole rounds. I mean, goes through the crowd. He's up on stage, goes into the stadium. I love the Baron Sorrell pick. It's probably my favorite pick of the draft, maybe excluding Golden. 100% the best value pick that they had. So I love it. I think that defense for the, you know, the Longhorns specifically had a ton of guys drafted, even on the front seven. You know, Alfred Collins was a guy I think that a lot of fans were interested in the last few weeks as far as Packers fans. But I love what Sorrell can bring. Going to be rocking that number 99 jersey, and I think he's just going to be, you know, a piece that they definitely needed to add. And another versatile piece. It's kind of seems to be the theme. It seemed like versatility early on in the Goody era was, you know, on the offensive line, and now it seems like getting maybe into this Halfley defense, or even a little bit before that, like just a ton of guys that can play all over. You know, having listened to Ross Uglum on the Packaday podcast or, YouTube side of things, he was talking about how they just kind of used last year Sorrell all across the line, right? Had him on the outside, used him at three tech, had him at nose tackle at times. So, like, that versatility is massive, and I think that only pushes some of these other guys on the roster that we want to see do better, whether they're higher-round picks or, you know, late-round picks that are undrafted guys that we've seen that have been able to be productive on that front four, that front seven. But I love, absolutely love the Sorrell pick. The Oliver one's interesting to me. Like, I think there's been a lot of people, you know, specifically yourself, I've heard Ross talk about it, even, you know, Cheesehead TV, other pundits, like, not really sure where Oliver's going to match up. Like, does he contribute, you know, 10, 15 snaps on special teams? Is he a pure, like, you know, pass rusher at that point? I've heard other people, like, I think Mike Renner was on Packaday, the YouTube side of things recently, and he was even talking about maybe playing off-ball linebacker. I don't really know where he ends up. Obviously, injuries were the big thing for him to have fallen into the fifth round, which is tends to be what Goody likes to do. He likes to find some of these guys that were at least injured maybe in their last year or a certain year, or maybe had a super high grade the year before and has fallen, whether it be injury or just production. So I don't mind the Oliver pick. I think he's definitely, you know, as far as just aesthetic-wise, like, doesn't really impress. 6'1", about 240, so doesn't have the long arms, he's not going to have the bend on the edge, but wherever they can match him up, I think he'll be able to contribute. Could be one of those Rich Bisaccia picks, which is like, he's going to be a special teamer, which is fine, so we'll end up seeing where he falls in, but that one was kind of head-scratching me, too. You know, when the name comes off the board, I wasn't super familiar with his game, but you're like, okay, there's obviously a need there, and I think we kept seeing that later on in the draft. And outside of that, I mean, I didn't mind the Warren Brinson one as well. I thought that was a good pick. Seems like possibly a replacement to TJ Slayton. I think he's got a little bit more production than he needs to get, you know, under his belt, or at least some, you know, work inside. But I think he'll have an opportunity to at least get some snaps early on. Maybe not year one, but definitely, you know, year two as they start to trend up with that D-line. Should be in a decent spot. So those three picks were fun, but definitely the Sorrell one sticks out to me as one of the best picks of the draft for me.
I'm with you. I think just the defensive line, getting some depth competition, some guys that can rotate in. I don't know that they, and you know, we'll see what happens with Sorrell. He's certainly got a lot of talent, but not sure they got, you know, again, any sort of stars. And it's, you know, when you're taking day three, that's not what you're expecting. But I think they got some really nice rotational pieces that can come in and potentially help sooner rather than later, and maybe have some niche roles within the defense, which again, is never necessarily a bad thing, especially when they have, you know, kind of their starting lineup already set along that defensive line. We're being joined by Matt Frelick, Packaday Podcast. You can find him on social media at @Matt_Frey_. Of course, you're live here on 1250 AM and 105.7 FM, the Fan Studios, and powered by the Potawatomi Sportsbook. All right, Matt, one of the things that was maybe most head-scratching to the entire draft, or maybe at least most unexpected, is the corner position goes completely ignored, basically, until the seventh round, and they take Micah Robinson in the seventh round. You've got the whole Jair scenario in the background. Of course, Eric Stokes is gone. Corey Ballantyne's gone. Robert Rochelle is gone. In comes Nate Hobbs, but you're still lacking lacking depth, you're lacking bodies at that position. If there was anything that I would have expected them maybe to even double up on, it would have been corner, and instead yet just one seventh round pick. What did you make of their decision to maybe not address corner a little bit more aggressively in this draft?
Just absolutely shocking. I felt like there was, you know, maybe not in the first round, but definitely day two. It seemed like an obvious, pick at that point. I think there was a little bit of run on some guys. I mean, they definitely had an opportunity on like Trey Amos. Obviously, he went after them too at that 54 pick that they spent on Belton. A few other guys. I mean, Darian Porter. I was, you know, super high Raz guy, but he goes to the Raiders. And then you even look around that 87 mark. There was a couple guys even after, but it seemed like there was that sweet spot even right before them that went. So you look at how they addressed it in a seventh rounder who, yes, he's fast. Yes, he ran, you know, a good 40 time and a good 20, but like his split or his agility drills are very bad, like not good at all. So a little bit smaller guy too. I mean, he was graded the highest defensive player for Tulane, which is decent, you know, good. Davis had Rain saw that went earlier in the draft too, which I thought the Packers could have addressed him, but a little rich there at the third round pick. Nonetheless, rocked. Absolutely shocked that they didn't wait till the seventh round. And I think for me, like, I know you've been pretty adamant, and I absolutely, every time you kind of recalibrate me at least, is where you think the Jair thing is. I think your arithmetic at this point was like a 0.01%. I have to think it's better at this point. I know you even mentioned earlier in the first segment about Albert Breer's comment about he thinks that the Packers will work with Jair to get him back on a restructured deal. I don't know how much validity is behind that. I don't know how tapped in Albert Breer is to the Packers. It's just, unfortunately, it's going to be this thing that's going to continue to drag on, and I hate that. Like, you know, I want Jair to be on the field. When healthy, he's fantastic. We know that hasn't been the case over the last 3-4 years. What they're going to have to pay him this year, $17.5 million, makes that, you know, salary pretty tough to move if there was a trade candidate out there. But I feel like I thought, honestly, he was going to get traded either Friday morning or Saturday morning, kind of a team that maybe didn't get a corner in the draft, and he's still on the roster at this point, and it seems like they're trying to make some amends. I would love that because that would turn in one of their weaknesses into a big strength, but again, it's really comes down to health with Jair. I love the tenacity plays. I think maybe the personality sometimes within the locker room, within the organization, they don't necessarily love, but I think you have to have a couple guys like that if it's controlled. But, you know, if you're staying on the field, you know, 16, 17 games, that's cool. But when you're missing about half your games the last 3-4 years, that's tough to go down. So I think maybe it's a little telling of what they think about the situation. That was kind of the way I looked at it. Like, hey, they only took one corner in the entire draft. Maybe that's how they feel, that they can at least say, hey, Jair, we are going to, you know, we're not replacing you instantly with a day one or a day two pick, but I'm still nervous about where it's going to go. And I think every day kind of just waiting for that notification to see if he's moved, if he resigns, if what happens. But the closer and closer we get to camp, it's like, okay, maybe he's actually on this team. But it's unfortunate that it's going to basically lead into the entire summer and kind of distract us from maybe some of these new selections or some of these guys that we want to see develop in year two, year three.
I have no idea what you're talking about. Definitely never said 0.01%. That was fake news. That was made up for sure. No, I think as fans, we have no patience. We just want the answer. What's going to happen with Jair? Just tell us whatever it is. We can rip the Band-Aid if we need to rip the Band-Aid. I just want to know. And of course, you know, yeah. Goody has infinite patience. You know, he's thinking about 2042 and what the Packers are going to do, like on guys that were just born. You know, they're looking way ahead. So he's got plenty of patience with that stuff, and he'll let it play out the way it needs to play out. But yeah, we all want an answer right now. Just be like, just tell us what's going to happen with Jair. We want that answer. But unfortunately, he's not working on our time clock. He's working on theirs, which is probably a better thing overall. All right, Matt, before we get you out of here, as you mentioned, strengths and weaknesses, as you look at this roster right now, after the draft, after free agency, there's, you know, potentially could be a couple moves left, and again, the Jair situation's in the air, but what do you see as maybe some strengths and weaknesses of this Packers team as currently set?
You know, a week ago, or, you know, 8 days ago, I'd hope that my opinion on this would be swayed, but it's really not. I still see corner as probably the weakest spot. You're looking for some guys to maybe fit into some new roles, develop in year two or year three. So I definitely think it's corner at this point. Obviously Jair swings the pendulum pretty solid there. If he's there, I still think it's a weak point. It's maybe not their number one weakness, but you're hoping for Kerryon Valentine to develop. You're hoping Nate Hobbs can figure out his way in this new defense that he's in. You're hoping that you know, whatever the role Keyshawn Nixon is advocating for, that he can do that. But after that, it's, it gets a little bit thin there. So I definitely think corner is one of the weak spots. I still think edge isn't as strong as I'd like to see. I know we talked about, you know, Sorrell coming in, but I would have loved for them to get a true pass rusher in that, maybe the top 50 picks. Or even they addressed it in free agency. They really have yet to address that. And if you look in the last two cycles, whether it be the draft last year, free agency last year, the draft last year, and then again this year in 2025. So those are the two for me. But when you go a little bit wider on the defense, it's actually pretty strong. The way they're going to be have some guys that can, you know, plug and play in different spots, which I'm super excited for to what Hafley can do. As far as strengths, I think offensive line is this huge strength. They clearly addressed it pretty aggressively this offseason. And in this draft, I think they have 17 or 18 guys, which is phenomenal. It's fun to see that. It's fun to whittle down. I think we're going to start possibly even seeing a rotation out of the guys like a Donovan Jennings or a Telfort, or guys that kind of got a little bit exposed last year, where it's like, hey, you were a solid project. We saw what you could do against presumably one of the best defensive lines in the entire NFL, but let's see what these other project guys can do, from the John Williams to the Beltons to, you know, what Banks can develop into, obviously what Jordan Morgan we're all eager for. But I would say that's one of the strong ones. I would love to say that the receiving core is like a super, super strength. I think talent-wise it's very talented, but I just don't know how productive those guys are going to be. And that's my biggest fear. Like, we went into last year being like, we don't need a number one receiver. I think that's kind of, you know, I think that's a little ridiculous at this point. We noticed how some guys, you know, obviously, unfortunately, had injuries, drop problems, the way they maybe utilize certain players. They're obviously going to have some competition there. And, you know, a few of them with Dobbs, and then when Christian Watson comes back, definitely going to be fighting for their next contract, which I think is, you know, a good thing to have. But I would say that's still a strength of theirs, but just maybe not the production side of what we want to see. But again, that's not even how they're trying to run the offense. We have to always remember that they're moving in a different era with Jordan Love under center, and then with Josh Jacobs, and definitely the way they're beefing up that offensive line. So that's kind of the, you know, strengths and weaknesses. I would say even maybe linebacker at this point is pretty strong. You look, you know, Edgerrin Cooper, Quay Walker, Isaiah Simmons, who I'm a huge fan of, maybe he can contribute on special teams, and obviously they even brought back McDuffie too. So, like, I think there's some strengths there, but there's still some, you know, a few things that I was hoping would be different 8 days removed from the draft that we didn't see, and even, you know, in free agency that didn't get switched around too much. But I like where the team's going, and we're always going to be critical about the 91 players in the roster, and we're going to fall in love with some UDFAs this offseason that will hopefully make the team and maybe only end up in the practice squad. But I'm excited to see what this 91 ends up looking like as we get it whittled down to early September.
Falling in love with UDFAs is my specialty. I'm very much looking forward to that. Matt, awesome stuff as always. I know you got a Pack-A-Day podcast coming up. What else you want to plug on the way out, and where can we find you on social media?
Yeah, absolutely. Last draft episode will come up tomorrow with Rob Rieger, myself, and Eli Berkovitz going into the Michael Robinson pick, going into the John Williams pick, how they can compete in the corner room, the offensive line room, and kind of where they stack up. Of course, you can find me already, Andy, as you've plugged on X, formerly known as Twitter, @Matt_Frey_. It's @MATT_FRA_. Every Saturday, Pack-A-Day podcast, wherever you get your podcast episodes at this point in 2025, you can check us out there. It'll be Eli, myself, and Janelle Mackey will be back on the rotation, diving into the summer, right? Looking for some guests, as always, some different nuances, maybe some ad-lib, mad-lib type stuff in there, any news that might come. Maybe there'll be a Jair breaking news on a Friday as a recording for our Saturday episode. That is the one benefit of recording late in the week. You do get that news dump potentially about 3:30, 4 o'clock Lambeau time, but that's where you can check us out. And ready for training camp, honestly. I know you just mentioned right before the hopping on here about the mini camp not being open, or the rookie mini camp to the media. That's at least for one day. That's pretty disappointing. Like, I was hoping to live vicariously through you as I normally do. But anytime I can get down to training camp, looking for that schedule to come out, and obviously the schedule release, I think we have in a couple, you know, a week and a half here too. So all those little milestones that we try to build up really high. But yeah, check me out on Twitter. Anyone that's got any questions, if they're ever coming into Green Bay, hit my DMs up, and happy to go back and forth on any recommendations or just Packers talk as always.
Matt, you're the absolute best. I cannot thank you enough. Always great catching up with you. I'm looking forward to the show tomorrow. And in the meantime, you enjoy your weekend.
I appreciate it, Andy. Take care.
Hey, you bet. That is Matt Frelick. You can find him on social media @Matt_Frey_. You can find him, of course, on the Pack-A-Day podcast as well. Meanwhile, this is the Pack-A-Day radio show. We got a lot left to talk about, so keep it right here on 105.7 and 1250 AM. We'll be right back.
Today's episode is sponsored by NerdWallet's Smart Money Podcast. Making financial decisions shouldn't feel like picking a TV show. Too many options, too much hype, and no way to know what's actually good. NerdWallet's Smart Money Podcast cuts through the clutter. Their finance journalists break through real-world money decisions with clear, research-backed insights. From investing to home buying to credit cards, the nerds help you navigate major financial decisions with confidence. Leave TV to fate. Leave your next financial move to the nerds. Follow NerdWallet's Smart Money Podcast wherever you listen.